You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, this is Wesley Ewer from Land of the Lost. I played Will, and my entire performance on that show was, "Run, Holly, run! There's a dinosaur!"
Hi, this is Kathy Coleman.
Hi, this is Phil Paley. I played Chalk on Land of the Lost.
You're listening to the Flopcast.
Flopcast rocks!
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 587.
Let's get the show going.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Oh, hi, Kevin.
It's our 1987 themed show. We got a couple of important things going on today because we're continuing our 80s shows. Plus, it's our annual summer robot show. I know you look forward to that all year, every year.
Yes. I never stop thinking about robots.
I know how you are when it comes to robots in the summertime. And most importantly, we have a special guest with us tonight. And it's the same special guest we had last year when it was time to talk robots. We loved having Chris here so much that he's back. Everybody, please welcome from Sci-Fi Explosion, our buddy Chris Cummins.
Hey, everybody. Bleep blorp. Thank you for having me back. Love talking robots.
We loved having you here to talk robots last year. Yeah, this is every year of the Flopcast, we've done a summer robot list. And so this is what, number 12? 12th annual.
Nice.
Flopcast summer robot list. That's crazy.
Good heavens.
This might be the longest running tradition in the history of everything. And we've got it right here on the Flopcast. That's exciting.
That is.
Chris is here. We like to just say things that are wrong and just move on. But anyway, Chris is here. We're all here. Robots are here. Robots are coming soon. But first, hey, Cornflake, how about National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
I'm feeling generous, Kevin and Chris, so how about an entire week?
Okay.
National Bargain Hunting Week. Is coming up.
I like a bargain.
National Bargain Hunting Week. Well, I mean, I'm thinking like I have not been out scouring the yard sales and flea markets and cheapo junk shops as once I did. You know, I certainly used to just go around scrounging around for weird old cheap stuff. And I haven't done a lot of that in a long time. Are you someone out there looking for the bargains?
I like outlet stores, like real outlets, not the kind that they put together in those ritzy shopping centers, but the kinds you find on the back roads where you can pay a lot less for something you need. I don't go out and get stuff just for the sake of getting stuff. I have a name for it, though. I don't call it bargain hunting.
Okay.
I call it sneaking up on the deals.
Oh. Uh-huh. I like it.
You cannot tell the deals that you're coming.
So you're going to be creeping around at strange times, day and night.
That's how I get the sundresses that actually have pockets in them.
Yep. We should point out all three of us are wearing sundresses with pockets in them right now. That's kind of the show uniform for tonight's show.
It is the uniform.
Now, Chris, you strike me as someone who would know some secret, weird, super cool places to find stuff. Would that be correct?
That is correct. If either of you two were ever in Philadelphia, I will show you where the deals are. I have weird shopping abilities. Like I have the most useless superpower at all, and that like is very useful to me. But you know. Like I can find old Peanuts paperbacks and old Archie comics. Like I'll just know. I'll be like, that store has Archies in it. And I will, you know, and I'll just go in and voila, there will be like, here's 100 Bronze Age comics for like $3. So I'm a man who loves a good bargain, but I do have or like Dynamite Magazine is another thing that I can find. I can track down a Dynamite Magazine with the original inserts. This is very...
Now you're talking our language.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're like, kind of Dynamite super fans around here.
Oh, believe me, same. I'm from my vantage point, I'm sitting here looking at my Dynamite book collection, including I just recently found a Count Morbida puzzle book in my top secret local bookstore that I dare not, my local secret used bookstore that I will not reveal on the air because I don't want other people finding out about it. But if you ever come to Philly, I will take you there. I love this stuff. I'm one flat cat away from a hoarders episode. So like, this is my life. So yeah, I'm all about bargain week and I'm here for the bargains, Cornflake and Kevin.
Oh, hey Kevin.
Yeah.
You know that cloud snuggie I have? Remember my famous cloud snuggie?
Yes, you wore it in public at a convention we were at together. You were just walking around wearing the famous blanket with sleeves, and it was just like a sky and clouds on it. Yes.
And it just drew people to me. I got that.
Well, sure. They didn't know you were there. They thought they were just out for a walk.
That they were out in nature, but it was me. Yeah. I got that from sneaking up on the deals. So It's not all junk, let me tell you. You can get some good stuff.
When you get a Dynamite magazine, yeah, you don't know what's inside because they came with stickers and posters and stuff. And you find a Dynamite these days, it's 45 years old. Yep. And what a delight when you open it and there's the poster still in there.
You need a hookup on a 3D Neil Adams skateboarding poster. I'm your man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got one. I've got a Dynamite magazine, and it has the Breaking Away, the TV series, not the movie, Breaking Away TV series poster inside with Sean Cassidy.
That's kind of that's a little treasure.
I actually hung it up on the wall for a while.
it's the sort of thing that I completely understand, like the hanging of the weird Breaking Away poster. Like I was just cleaning out my parents' house last week, and I've discovered that my parents had saved every card that I got as a kid for birthdays and Christmas and everything, just two gigantic boxes of, I have an older brother and an older sister, and there were just cards in there that we were all given. And so I rooted through and I picked all the pop culture cards I got. A shocking amount of Ziggy cards, I might add. But
Ziggy. But
my favorite is, I'm looking at it right now because I'm going to frame it and hang it on my wall. It is this off-brand Flintstones birthday card from American Greetings, but it just says Yabba Dabba Doo on the front, and you open it up and it says Happy Birthday to You. So they really kind of half-assed. They just half-assed the message. But the Dino on it, he is blue and he has a green like nose. So it's just this completely off-brand Dino. Now, this to me, and this will not only give you insight into my psyche, but explain while I'm single. This to me was like the find of the century. And I'm like, I have the perfect IKEA frame that this is going to go in and go on my weird museum of nothingness that I call my park. I'm sorry, we're 10 minutes in and I've already completely derailed the show.
That's all we do is derail around here. It's fine. That sounds fantastic. I like the idea just that the guy in charge of color at the greeting card place just went to town. They're just doing their own thing.
No key art whatsoever, apparently, at American Greetings back in 1977.
No one told them to yabba dabba don't.
I have a couple of thoughts. A couple of bargain hunting thoughts came to mind. And I believe these are both things you can see on YouTube. And up here in New England, Cornflake, do you remember a Dollar Bills Discount World in New Hampshire?
Yes.
The commercials? Did you ever go there or did you just see the commercials?
I just saw the commercials.
Yeah, actually, I went there once or twice, but there was a place. It's not there anymore. They closed down a few years ago. Dollar Bills Discount World. And the guy would buy like a half hour of commercial time every Saturday morning. So you could just, my friend and I would watch a half hour long commercial for this place. And it was just this maniac, Dollar Bill. He wore like an umbrella hat with strings of dollar bills dangling off of it and just flying all around him.
It was so weird.
And he would just run around his store like a crazy person, just ranting and screaming about all the incredible bargains to be found there. And he got weirdly suggestive at times. Once in a while, it'd be kind of disturbing. And we found it absolutely fascinating. And I highly recommend looking up on YouTube Dollar Bills Discount World in New Hampshire, because you would love this guy.
Oh, I was literally just about to drop a link that I just found in the chat.
Searching as we speak. Perfect. Yeah, I know Dollar Bill is there. Yes. Definitely watch some Dollar Bill. And the other guy that I've been enjoying lately, there's a guy called the Flea Market Falcon.
Okay.
This guy in Florida, I think he resells stuff on eBay or something. So, but he goes to flea markets and discount stores and stuff. But he wears a mask, like a falcon mask. So at the beginning of the video, you see him wearing this big, weird, feathery falcon mask, and he explains that he's the flea market falcon. He soars high above the flea markets, and then he swoops in to scoop up the deals. And then the rest of the video is he's just shopping for, he's looking for video games and DVDs and records and stuff. And he's just wandering through a flea market.
Hmm.
I need a falcon mask for sneaking up on the deals.
It's strangely entertaining. So everybody look up Dollar Bills Discount World. Look up Flea Market Falcon if you want to just watch some stupid bargain hunting on YouTube.
I would like to just add to this this merriment by saying I would also recommend for Kevin and Cornflake. It's kind of along the same lines, but if you're looking for bargains on classic video games and you live in the Philadelphia area or in the East Coast, they may ship worldwide. I'm sound like a commercial for them, but I've never actually bought a game, video game. But there's this thing called TNT Amusements that's been around since the 1990s here in Philly. And they have an infomercial that was like Philadelphia's premier infomercial, in which this gentleman is walking around his warehouse where he has video games. And it is so hilariously entertaining. And they have like a kids party because they do kids parties there. And it's just delightfully off-putting is what I would call it. So I'll give you both the link there. But it's TNT Amusements. And that's kind of Philly's most widely known infomercial, because this thing aired nonstop from 1995 to at least like 2008. They've updated it a bunch of times and done things, but the OG infomercial is still the best from 1995. Just a half hour of retro craziness.
Oh, excellent. I look forward to checking that out. All right. Well, these days, yeah, I feel like I've got too much junk already. We're full. And so I have not been doing much shopping at all in the last several years. But there's something to be said for some old-fashioned bargain hunting. And look at that. Now we have a whole week to celebrate.
Yes.
Hooray.
Let's do it.
Hunt those bargains.
Now, the next thing for today's show, though, is this is Flopcast episode 587. And for all these episodes that start 5-8-something, we've been celebrating 10 weeks of the 80s. And episode 587 means we are celebrating 1987. And the way Cornflake's been celebrating, of course, is you've been finding a commercial from that, whatever year we're discussing, and we watch the commercial, and we discuss. Now, Cornflake sent a commercial to us right before the show started, so Chris and I have now seen a 1987 commercial for Glad cling wrap.
That's right.
So as soon as this started,
Don't get mad, get glad.
I recognized Bosley's voice. There's Tom Bosley doing the voiceover through the whole thing. And we've talked about Tom Bosley as the spokesperson for Glad trash bags.
That's right.
Strangely, that's come up many, many times on the Flopcast over the years, including very recently. But I forgot that he was also plugging whatever else they were selling over at Glad.
Yeah, so me too.
This is Glad plastic cling wrap. But there's Bosley now. He's pushing the cling wrap as well. Not just trash bags.
Just all things Glad.
He's multi-talented.
Yes.
Yeah, Bosley's selling Glad cling wrap. But this is a freaky cling wrap commercial. What's going yes, on here?
That's why I picked it. Oh, some poor mom is trying to wrap up the leftovers, but the inferior cling wrap is wrapping her up and cackling maniacally.
Now, what was going on here? Like, was that a puppet? This is not the age of CG imagery in a plastic wrap commercial. So that they somehow, this was a scary talking demon animated flying roll of a plastic wrap.
Correct, with teeth.
Just absolute nightmare fodder.
But the, I mean, they did a nice job with this. It was very effective. It was flying around the room.
Yeah, and it had her thoroughly wrapped up.
I mean, there's somehow, I suppose, someone was somehow controlling this with invisible wires or something, but this thing was just flying. And yes, just attacking a woman in her own kitchen.
Yeah, and it's a real fight. Like, she gets backed into a corner and she's trying to throw a chair at it and it doesn't work. And then the kid comes in from playing and is like, "What's wrong, Mom?" And the mom is like, "I'm fine." But she's covered in cling wrap and it looks really weird. And the kid just rolls his eyes and goes back outside.
Do you think this was just her thing? She was into just being wrapped up in plastic wrap. And then she like claimed to her family that, no, the cling wrap attacked me.
Hey, when it comes to being wrapped up with cling wrap, don't knock it till you try it.
Whatever she's into.
The box of this has teeth. It is a nightmare.
Yes.
Nightmare inferior foil product.
But it feels to me like all those boxes have teeth, because have you ever accidentally caught your fingertips on those? I've only done that about once a week my entire life.
Yeah.
But then at the end, once we finally get out of the kitchen, we are treated to some actual on-camera Tom Bosley at the end. So that's a treat. There's it Bosley.
Is, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
He's just acting all calm and casual and happy, as if we didn't just witness a murder, essentially.
Right. Some woman just getting terrorized. I would have liked to have seen Tom Bosley wrapped up in cling wrap.
I'll bet you would. I know what you're into.
I'm just weird. But then, of course, the angry demon cling wrap, we see it still talking when they put it in the trash. Yes. If something is still talking and I put it in the trash, I don't have confidence it's going to stay there.
Oh, yeah, that's Lovecraftian. That thing, you can never silence that. It's just, yeah, that is an elder god for sure.
An elder cling wrap god.
So this is a post-Happy Days Tom Bosley at this point, right? Happy Days wrapped by, what, like 84?
Wrapped.
85, maybe?
Wrapped, Kevin, really?
Happy Days would have been over for a couple of years, at least, at this point. Now, are we into the Father Dowling era at this point? I'm not sure. I think so.
Yes, 87, yes.
Father Dowling were after Murder, She Wrote. Or was he Father Dowling on Murder, She Wrote? I forget.
I don't know. Was that a spinoff?
No, I don't. I know he was on Murder, She Wrote quite a bit, but I don't know the character he was on.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
It was a spinoff, or it was a ripoff. there's something.
Tom was doing good work then, still.
He was also doing the Kingdom of the Gnomes on, like, the voice work for that Nickelodeon cartoon, Nick Jr.
Yeah.
Look at Bosley go. Unstoppable.
He has an amazing gnome voice, I'm just saying.
Ralph Mouth, we never heard from again, but Bosley just kept on rolling.
Yeah.
Oh, it is so interesting that you should mention Ralph Mouth, because if I didn't talk about Bargain Week, I was going to mention that Donnie Most is having a milestone birthday this week.
Wow.
Secret birthday knowledge.
I don't mean to slight Donnie Most like that, by the way. I just had to go for the cheap joke, but we are huge fans of Donnie Most.
Yes, we are.
You think he is the most?
He is the most, yes. And he's still out there. And he's a big band singer. He tours and performs with a big band these days.
Swing music, yes.
He was a guest on our friend Ken Reed's TV Guidance Counselor show a while back. Don Most, doing just fine. And but man, we loved seeing Tom Bosley pushing more Glad products in 1987, even though they're trying to murder us. Good job.
They're trying to murder us and keep our food fresh.
Yes, they're doing it all over at Glad. I don't have anything that dramatic for my 1987 contribution today. I hardly have much at all. What I love when Chris is here is that I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, because I just take over your show. I'm just like the rudest guest. It's my Philly thing. I can just blame it on being from Philly.
Chris is doing all the heavy lifting tonight, and I love it. I do have one little 87 thing I can toss out, though. And, well, like last week, I had a concert report for our 86 show, because I went to a Belinda Carlisle concert, and Belinda launched her solo career post-Go-Go's in 86. It happened again this week. I have an appropriate concert report, because back in 1987, I saw on their final concert tour of their original run in Providence, Rhode Island in 87, I went to see The Cars.
Oh, nice.
And man, we love The Cars. I was a massive Cars fan back then and still am today.
Yeah.
And you can't see The Cars anymore. of course.
Right. There's a few prominent members missing.
Both of their front men are no longer with us. Ben Orr died 20 years ago, at least, and then Rick just a couple of years ago. So no more Cars. I got to see the Cars a couple of times, including, way back in 87. But there's a Boston band, local band, called Eddie Japan. They do their own original stuff. They're a very cool band. But a few years ago, they made a record, and the record was produced by Cars keyboardist Greg Hawks. And since then, a few times a year, they started doing these shows. The band Eddie Japan will do a whole night of Cars music, but they're joined by Greg Hawks. He's with them on keyboard for the whole show.
It's so great to see that he's still active.
It's great. They just do this maybe a half dozen times a year. They'll do these special Cars shows with the actual guy from the Cars. So the mayor of Chickentown and I went to see Eddie Japan with Greg Hawks.
What is their stage presence like compared to the Cars?
Like every other band in the world, they are way more animated than the Cars were. The Cars infamously did not move on stage. They would just stand there and play their songs. They sounded great. Like, they sounded perfect when they would play live, but they did not move at all. They had no stage presence, and they would not even speak to the audience in between songs for the most part. Wow. I mean, I loved it. I had a great time seeing the Cars back in 87, but they lived up to their reputation as, we're just going to stand here and play our songs. Everybody leave us alone. Eddie Japan, very fun band. They have two lead singers, a man and a woman, and they kind of trade off. So you get to hear a bunch of Cars songs, you know, being sung with a female lead vocal, which is fun. And even Greg has loosened up. Greg is quite talkative. Unlike when he was with the Cars, he chats quite a bit. Crazy fun night. We were very happy with that show, so I would recommend everybody go see Eddie Japan. Even if Greg Hawks isn't there that night, go see Eddie Japan. Very fun band.
Do you know where they got their name?
I have no idea. Good question.
The world may never know.
Yeah, let's say that they're named after movie super nerd Eddie Deason.
Yes.
That's a safe bet, I think.
It's a great band name.
It is a good name, yeah, yeah. No, they were cool. Now, this is our robot show. As we've said, every summer through the entire history of the Flopcast, it's summertime. We want to talk about robots. Please don't ask why. We haven't figured that part out yet. But every summer, we do a top 4.5 list of robots. It is somehow robot-themed. It's happened every single year of the Flopcast. So this is indeed our 12th annual robot list. And this year, we're doing the same thing we did last year, which is, let's make Chris do all the work.
Thank you, Chris.
I live for this stuff. So, yeah, sign me up.
And so, let's get into it. How about, here we go. It's a top 4.5 list.
Commencing countdown. 4, 3, 2, 1. What point time? The top 4.5 list.
And Chris, I believe the plan is we're celebrating the year 1987, and you have 1987 robots for us.
I do. Yes. Yes, I do.
And you're one of the only people that I would trust with this assignment. I knew that I could go to you and possibly no one else and just give a specific year and know that you would have no trouble coming up with robots from that year.
Yeah, there were some hard choices. I had to do the brutal edit here. Look, anyone who's ever like seen any of my sci-fi explosion stuff knows that I take this kind of ephemera very seriously. So
I cannot wait to hear which robots you have picked, Chris. Let's start at number 4.
For number 4, I'm going to say that everyone out there listening deserves a break today. And in 1987, you could go to McDonald's and you could get a McDonald's robot. You could get several McDonald's robots due to their McDonald's Changeables Happy Meal.
Oh, wow.
And in the McDonald's Changeables Happy Meal, you could get everything from a Big Mac to an Egg McMuffin that would open up. It would look like the food item, and you would open it and transform it, and then it would become a robot. And these were all pretty cool. They did several waves of these, right? I think they did from 87 to 89. They did three or four different waves. But the my pick for the favorite, my pick for the best one of these, and, you know, I'm sure if readers don't send me hate mail, but you can send me these toys because I currently don't have them in my possession. I would love to have them. But my favorite was the large fries robot because it just looks super cool. It's fries that transform into this robot with kind of a sad blue face. It's very pensive. Maybe it's thinking about its sodium intake or its high blood pressure and, you know, robot problems. But it's just a really cool, it's one of the best, you know, the 1980s really were a golden age for fast food premiums.
Oh, absolutely.
They weren't just junky toys, and there were a lot of stuff that wasn't licensed. It was just like, you know, it wasn't so much a movie or TV show tie-ins, although those were done frequently and are really, really cool. But, you know, I have a special soft spot in my heart for McDonald's merchandising just in general. The only thing that would have made this better is if it was like Grimace, who turned into, like, you know, one of those tokusatsu kind of robots. You know, that would be cool. And I really wish they would do that with all the current Grimace love that we have, is to bring back McDonald's Changeables and make Grimace into a robot for Happy.
So was Changeables a thing outside of McDonald's, or was that their in-house?
It was their in-house branding of the GoBot kind of Transformers.
Right. Their in-house, you know, ripoff of the Transformer robot thing. Okay. I don't think I saw these. I have no memory of these. They sound incredible. I would love to see McDonald's food transforming into robots. Well,
there are commercials on eBay for these things. Not commercials on eBay, commercials on YouTube. The actual products are readily available on eBay. Yeah. And, you know, some of them go for more than others. But it's just a cool, fun idea.
Yeah.
Like transforming food. Kids, play with your food, you know.
I love that. I will certainly look that up. And yeah, I love the idea of the fries with a sad blue face.
Maybe it was a blue face because the fries were cold.
Probably, yeah.
They had a blue face just like Dino from the Flintstones, right?
Exactly.
Very nice. Well, that's a killer start to the list. Suddenly, all I care about is McDonald's food robots.
So four kind of does lead into number three. If y'all are ready for number three.
Sure. What you got?
Okay. So number three is Optimus Prime, but number three is very specifically an Optimus Prime puppet. Now, let me explain. After Transformers, the movie came out and traumatized a nation in 1986 by killing Optimus Prime, spoiler alert, you know, they didn't do any new episodes. They were doing this thing called Headmasters, which didn't really catch on here in America, but it took off in Japan. And, you know, Transformers season five, the final season of Transformers, was just repeats. What they did is they repeated the very first miniseries. They broke up the Transformers movie into a 5-part Monday to Friday miniseries. And they added in the Stan Bush music video for The Touch to pad it out a little bit because, you know, it's a 90-minute movie that they had to stretch out to 5 24-minute slots. And then they showed a few other miniseries from the history. But there was no new cartoon footage. But what there was new wraparound segments for the Transformers TV show in which a little kid who's named Tommy Kennedy was talking to Optimus Prime, which was this gigantic wooden puppet of Optimus Prime. And it was done with animatronics and stop motion. And so mixed live action with animation. And the whole thing was, Optimus Prime, tell me a story about the Transformers. And then he would say, well, Tommy, and then he'd, you know, lead into one of these old episodes. And so were these great, really fun wraparound segments. And, you know, and they use that as a way they would have Optimus like name drop new toys in these wraparound segments. Ooh. That necessarily featured in the cartoon. So it was like really good, like a way to keep the new toys that weren't being promoted on screen in the little kid's mind. They'll hear, oh, I don't know about this figure. I'm going to go out and get them. But I really, really recommend checking out like some of these sequences on YouTube, because this is just an enormous wooden puppet and they used a I forget the guy's name. He was a famous Sesame Street guy who was the puppeteer for this Prime puppet. But it's just this beautiful, beautifully done puppet of Optimus Prime, and it was really just really an interesting way to repackage reruns, right? And you know, it was still a disappointment, obviously, because kids were like, "Oh, I've seen all these cartoons already." But you know, it was a transitional time for Transformers. It was kind of the end of Transformers mania in the United States for a little bit, obviously. It was kind of that first wave of Transformers are winding down. So, you know, they just used a puppet, Optimus Prime, to promote reruns. And it's a glorious thing.
It sounds incredible.
It's really neat.
And it also sounds like that was more trouble than just making more cartoons.
Well, yeah. I mean, it you know, it's kind of this kind of forgotten bit of Transformers lore that was really interesting.
That reminds me of the Ruby Spears late 70s Plastic Man cartoon from Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah.
When they did a syndicated version showing those cartoons, but they added those live action segments.
Yeah.
With a guy dressed up as Plastic Man doing cheap Plastic Man stretching effects.
I have there's this whole evening magazine on my Twitch shows. I've shown, when I do the Cosmic Cartoon Show, I've shown as an extra feature like the Plastic Man cartoon, and then there's an evening magazine like profile of the guy who is Plastic Man.
Oh wow. And
it's so obnoxious. Like it's just really, really like it's lovably bad. And yeah. But yeah, it's kind of that similar thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things like you can't believe how much trouble they went to just to attach a new bit onto an old cartoon.
It's a lot of fun. So look on like Transformers Season 5 wraparounds and you can see this. And just the puppetry work. I'm a bit of a puppetry nerd, so like I really appreciate the craftsmanship that went into this.
Every time I talk to Chris, I walk away with this long list of stuff I have to see. And now I'm adding to it. Optimus Prime puppet and evening magazine profile of Plastic Man.
I'll send you links. Like, yeah, thank you. You're in the A list, so you'll get. So that's number three. Now, 2 and 1 are more traditional, and I'm sure you're going to guess what these are. Number two is Data from Star Trek: The Next Generation, because of course it is.
That's right.
Thank you.
Because of course it is.
Yeah, that's right. 87 was when Next Generation started.
You know,
of course.
And I'll be honest, I was trying my damnedest to figure out how I could shoehorn the Max Headroom pirate signal intrusion guy into this list. But there's no way I was going to be like, Max Headroom was kind of AI, which is kind of a robot. There's no way I could make it happen. I racking my brain for about 40 minutes the other day, being like, okay, can I shoehorn? And it's like, Chris, no. Everyone knows you love Max Headroom nonsense. No. Why don't you do something traditional? That's what the audience wants. You don't have to be Mr. Obscurity, Mr. Esoteric. Give the crowd what they want. What the crowd wants is Data. And Data is great.
Yes,
I didn't come up to become a Star Trek fan at all until the fifth season of Star Trek Next Generation, specifically the episode Cause and Effect with Kelsey Grammer as Captain Morgan Batesman. My friends were all big Star Trek fans, and I was just over my friend John's on one Saturday, and Star Trek was coming on. He loved Star Trek, so we sat there and we watched it, and it was probably the first episode of Star Trek I ever sat through in a whole. I'd seen some of the movies, and I had an awareness because I was a big, you know, I was a big sci-fi guy at that point, but, you know, I wasn't really a Star Trek person. You know, I was way more into, like, Hitchhiker's Guide and Star Wars and stuff like that, Doctor Who, but I watched this Cause and Effect episode, and it just spawned just, like, I need to see all of this. And, you know, at that point, it was just like the only thing being run in syndication was the fifth season. So I watched all the fifth season. And then eventually when the earlier seasons came to syndication, I went and loved it. And I think of the Next Generation cast, Worf was always my favorite. But, you know, you got to love Brent Spiner as Data, at least at this era of Brent Spiner. I think Picard, just there's too much Brent Spiner, too much Soong stuff. But in the original, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation and Generations of First Contact, you can't beat Data. You can't beat Brent Spiner. Just really, really good stuff. And he's definitely like one of the, what can I say about Data that hasn't been said a billion times already?
Oh, sure. And I think it was like an instant fan favorite character.
Yes.
Kids love Data. I remember watching the debut of Next Generation in 87. Like, I was tuning in to see, here's the new Star Trek. What in the world is this going to be like? And Data, I think everybody's reaction to Data was, oh, this, here's the new Spock
type. Right, yeah, yeah. Even I was aware of that because of Starlog magazine. You know, I was an avid reader in 87 of that. And I was just like, oh, this is, you know, this isn't for me, but it looks kind of cool. But look, yeah. The Measure of a Man is first season, right? I think that's a first season Next Generation episode, but that is just like, it's just such a showpiece for the possibility of what that show could be. And like the first season of Next Generation, no one's going to deny that it wasn't rough.
Yeah. It started slow, literally slow.
It was
kind of a slow show at first.
I really think that people forget, you know, a little context of the era, like, reviving old TV shows, when it happened right before the pandemic and they brought back like Roseanne and Murphy Brown and a few other shows there, everyone's like, oh, we've never done that before. And completely forgetting about the 80s trend of,
sure,
you know, Star Trek, The Next Generation and The Monsters Today and what's happening now.
WKRP.
WKRP. Yeah.
Right.
There was this whole kind of trend in the mid to late 80s.
Yeah. Love Boat. Love Boat, The Next Wave.
Love Boat, The Next Wave. Yeah. And I'm a sucker for when shows do that, right? Like, I love that. And like some of those shows, like, I think WKRP, you know, the new one was great. For every one of those, though, you have like a New Monkees, which, you know,
right,
is, I mean, do I like the New Monkees? I might, but that's a decision for another time in another place. You know, I just think it was an interesting time for TV because, you know, you did have all these shows coming back and getting revivals. And given the success of Star Trek Next Generation now, like, no one expected it to be, you know, a hit. Like, Patrick Stewart didn't expect it to be a hit. It's beloved now. But, you know, going back to like media at the time and magazines and books and stuff, you can read about how much anger there was between classic Trek fans and how dare they, you know, redo the show with new characters. And
oh yeah, and the fact that it was syndicated, I'm sure other people are more informed about this than me, but I'm just going to assume, is that because none of the networks wanted it?
That I don't know.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if that was the case.
But also at the time, like, first run syndication was a big deal, you know, when it was, you know,
yeah that was just starting to catch on, but it was mostly sitcoms, like,
right,
the weird, goofy, you know, She's the Sheriff,
Rob,
kind Rob of sitcoms.
Yeah.
Throb, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like What a Country with Yakov Smirnoff.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah. And the Don Adams one where he worked in the supermarket. And yeah.
Yes, yeah, it was mostly super high quality syndicated sitcoms.
And things from Canada.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then along comes Trek.
Next Generation. And it leveled the playing field. But like, none of the characters were, I feel like the thing about Star Trek The Next Generation is it didn't truly become that the show that everyone loves until like second quarter of the third season. You know, that's when things really start to gel. And my personal opinion is, like, now having gone back, seen every episode and every movie hundreds of times probably, is like the fifth season was the show just running on all cylinders. And that was just like its creative peak. But and that was the first episode I saw was in the fifth season. So maybe I'm using bias there. But there's no denying the kind of cultural impact that like Brent Spiner and Data had, because that character was just an instant. And, you know, the quote unquote outsider character in Trek is always the one that people who feel like a little left out of the mainstream are going to gravitate to. And that's a really, really important thing for people to have, you know, is to have like a sense of like, oh, someone out there is like me, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And in a time before the internet, in a time before this kind of proliferation of media that we find ourselves in now, you know, these kind of characters were few and far between. And so it made them all the more powerful and all the more meaningful.
Well, I know that to this day, Cornflake likes to take a Brent break.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you remember that, Chris, from the Trekkies documentary? The woman that was the Brent Spiner super fan.
Oh my God. Okay. Yes.
She figured out what direction he lived in from her house to his house, and she would face that way and take a Brent brick.
Oh my God. Yes.
She was great.
Yeah. It's hard to underestimate like that character's impact. It's really hard to measure it. I think the character's legacy has been, this is my personal opinion, has been devalued a little bit by the fact that, you know, Brent Spiner continues to play variations on Data and Soong in the subsequent series. I love Picard season 3, but I actively disliked the first two seasons. And like, I really, really wanted to love Picard. And I think there's great stuff about those first two seasons of the show. But, you know, just like in the second season, having, you know, him, his character, another Soong, and all the other Soongs are evil. And it's like, well, how'd Data turn out so good? Let's analyze that a little bit, because Soongs are maniacs. So I do feel like the character's legacy has been devalued a bit from all the subsequent rebirths and reboots and variations on the character. But there's still nothing that can take away from the epicness that was Data in Star Trek The Next Generation, making him, bringing this full circle, making it more than a great second, you know, on this list of 1987 robots, which meaning there's only one and one half more that I think are, in my opinion, better.
That's right. Wow. I cannot wait to see what's next in that case, because, yeah, Data's a huge one.
Yeah. How do you beat Data?
Chris, what is your number one robot for 1987?
Number one is, of course, the future of law enforcement, RoboCop. Yeah, I mean, RoboCop, who is he? What is he? Where does he come from? As Lisa Gibson asks in that movie. Again, this is another thing I agonized on, because Ed 209 also debuted in RoboCop. And that's another amazing robot design. And I have an action figure of him that Super 7 put out a few years back, sitting mere inches from me. I do love RoboCop. RoboCop is, I think, one of the finest satires. Probably the greatest science fiction satire of the 80s, hands down. It's also obviously just an incredibly, incredibly entertaining and solid, just beautiful story. Just, this is what movies are. They are just entertaining and just big ideas in here. Everything, it's a savage, savage dismantling of like corporate culture. Like, there's a lot of different parts of this movie to appeal to different type of people.
You know, this is almost like a blind spot for me at this point, because I've got to revisit RoboCop. I have not seen RoboCop since 1987.
I absolutely love it. It's the sort of thing, too, they could never figure out after this movie what to do with the character, which is super interesting to me, too.
Because I went to the sequel. I saw RoboCop 2 because Frank Miller wrote the script for it, I believe. And I was such a comic book nerd that's the reason I went to see part 2. And I have very little memory of either one of them. Like, they didn't really stick with me.
Yeah, so, okay, so Irvin Kershner, who did Empire Strikes Back, as you know, but I'm reminding the audience, and Frank Miller, who, you know, Frank Miller, he was hot off of, I guess, Daredevil. That's probably pre-Sin City.
Yeah, this would have been coming right off of Batman Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight, yeah, duh, yeah, yeah. I completely forgot about Dark Knight Returns. So, yeah, so he is like the name. And so this movie comes out and it's just this mediocre kind of shrug of a film.
Right.
And there were a lot of problems on that film. It's just, you know, I really want to like RoboCop 2 and I can't. And then RoboCop 3 comes along. And by that point, Peter Weller wanted nothing to do with it. And so they bring in Robert John Burke, who's fine in the role. But, it's just a straight up B movie. It is RoboCop fighting ninjas. And like, there's like a ninja bad guy. And I love RoboCop 3, but I love RoboCop 3 because it's trash.
How many RoboCops have there been?
There were three theatrical movies, a 2015 remake, another remake that was done by fans that was like a shot-for-shot comedy remake, low budget, called Our RoboCop Remake, which used to be on Vimeo and is probably on YouTube, that I can't recommend enough.
Oh, wow.
Because it's incredible. Then there was at least two cartoons, one done by Marvel, which is actually kind of fun, It's my second favorite RoboCop thing after the RoboCop original movie. Then there was, like, I want to say two live-action TV series, which were super low-budget. And they had this, the biggest thing, my only knowledge of the RoboCop TV show comes from the fact that KB Toy Stores, which is a defunct, I don't know, you had them in Boston.
Yeah, yep, they were around. Every mall had a KB Toy Store.
Yeah, and every KB Toy Store had just bins of unsold RoboCop TV show toys. But the only thing, you could not get a RoboCop figure. They only had the villain, and the villain was named Pudface. And that's all I tell you about the RoboCop live action TV series. I've never seen it. Like, I've watched a lot of bad, like, science fiction syndicated shows in my day, but I'm just going to watch the RoboCop movie again. I'm not going to watch his weekly TV adventures. So RoboCop is just, you know, it is one of the best science fiction films ever made, in my opinion, probably the best film of 1987, just a sci-fi masterpiece. Great performances all around. Paul Verhoeven at his glass breaking its best. Because if you watch a Paul Verhoeven film, you're going to see tons of breaking glass. That's like my favorite.
Yes.
My favorite director trademark of his. Ronnie Cox is great. God, I'm blanking on the name. The guy from that 70s show, that phenomenal actor. The red-haired guy who was in Fame and on ER is the villain who gets dumped in toxic waste and then destroyed by the truck. There's so many great... Ray Wise is in the film.
The guy from Fame the movie?
From Fame the movie, yeah. He played Montgomery.
Montgomery, okay. Yeah, I know that guy.
And I'm totally blanking on his name.
Nobody knows his name.
Paul McCrane. There we go.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's a masterpiece of a film. So that is my number one robot of 1987.
Nice. Well, I'm convinced I have got to revisit RoboCop.
If anyone ever visits the Sci-Fi Explosion Museum, in the Sci-Fi Explosion Museum, I have a stand-up that the kind folks, cardboard stand-up that the kind folks at KFC sent me when they did their RoboCop promotion of Colonel RoboCop. So it is RoboCop with a little, like, whatever that crumb catcher that Colonel Sanders had, his little bib, a bucket of chicken under his arm, and then, like, the white, like, kind of shock wig. And so that is one of my prized possessions.
That sounds like a treasure.
How cool is that?
It sure is. I'm the most me I can be. So that is my number one, but we are not done yet.
Well, no, this is a top 4.5 list, which means the top of the list is number 1/2. What you got?
Yeah, this is a little bittersweet for everyone listening right now. We're recording on the day after we lost Pee Wee Herman.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think any of us have truly taken in what we lost yesterday. You know, it was such a surprise, and it came so out of the blue.
Yeah, and Paul Rubens, he was only 70, and we tend to do our memorializing here on the Flopcast. We do in one big heap every January.
Yeah,
but again, like, we devote 2 weeks to just covering everybody from the whole previous year. But this is a case where I think we can make an exception for Paul Rubens, because he certainly embodies so much of what we love around here.
Yeah, and absolutely. So, like, you know, all that said, like, let's not overlook the fact that he gave us, I'm just going to say, and I don't mean this with hyperbole or anything, I just truly believe that Pee Wee's Playhouse was the greatest kids show ever. And it gave us Conky, who is just one of the most lovable robots I've ever seen. And Conky is, you know, the well-meaning but kind of goofy sometimes. He's, you know, just a fantastic design. I'm not sure if Gary Panner designed him, because I know Gary Panner, the great artist, did a lot of Pee Wee Playhouse stuff.
Well, Chris, you wanted to shoehorn Max Headroom into this somehow. Right. I noticed growing up that there were speech similarities between Max Headroom and Conky.
Yeah. With the robotic stutter, and, you know, probably parents' most hated part of Pee-wee's Playhouse, Conky was directly responsible for, which was giving Pee-wee the secret word of the day.
Right. The secret word came from Conky. The
secret word came from Conky. Conky generated the secret word every day, and whenever you hear it, everyone would scream real loud. And yeah, and it's just a tremendous design. But, you know, the thing is about Pee-wee's Playhouse is that is a show that just generations and generations and generations are going to continue to discover. And so Paul Reubens will never die. You know, I know it's kind of trite to say that about a celebrity when they pass, but I truly believe it, that he did so much great stuff in his life that, you know, he'll be remembered. And I can't think of a better way to kind of end this list than by paying tribute to him vis-a-vis Conky.
Paul was touring with the movie in 2020. You go to a theater, they'd show Pee-wee's Big Adventure, yeah. And then Paul would come out and talk. And I was going to go to that tour. I had tickets for that show in Boston, and that was one of the COVID cancellations of the year 2020. I missed my shot to see him live. But yeah, we all had connections to him. Several friends of ours here on the Flopcast, we had some friends that got to be on a Zoom call for Dr. Demento's birthday.
Oh, wow.
That Weird Al was on the call, and then Weird Al ended up bringing Paul into the call as well. So, yeah, bunch of friends of ours who are very close to the Flopcast were on a Zoom call with Dr. Demento, Weird Al, and Paul Reubens, so that they got to have that moment with him just a couple of years ago. So that was really special. Our friend Remy D, we know a lady named Remy D who also came out of the comedy music world, which is how we know her. But she's a burlesque dancer, and her signature dance is she does a Pee-wee Herman burlesque dance. And I saw a video that she made yesterday, and she said he created a playhouse where we could all be the little weirdos that we are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really eloquently said.
And yeah, I love that robot. I like a goofy, old-fashioned, like when you think robot, that's a robot. Yeah. You know, like I like how they were just going for it with Conky.
Absolutely. Yeah. The production design on that show is unmatched.
Yeah. Just no fooling around, old-fashioned robot. There you go.
Yeah.
No, that's a perfect way to wrap up this list. Very appropriate because, we're all thinking of Pee-wee Herman. We're thinking of Paul Reubens. And he gave us a fine, fine robot who was very much an important part of this year, 1987. Chris, you've done it again. That is a magnificent robot list.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Cornflake, for having me back. It's really like I love doing this, so thank you so much.
And I mean, shame on us, shame on me, because I tend to be the one that reaches out to get guests on the show, and I hate that a whole year has gone by in between having you as a guest. So please, everybody, hold me to we have to get Chris back here before a whole other year goes by, because Chris doesn't just talk about robots. We can talk with all kinds of stuff.
I mean, I mainly talk about robots, though, to be fair.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's a good point. It's mostly robots.
It's not like we have a problem with that, by the way.
It's mostly robots, but that's fine. But Chris's signature show is Sci-Fi Explosion, which is a Twitch show and occasionally a live show. And it is quite magnificent. If you like the kind of goofy, looking back at silly things from the past, weird sci-fi videos and such, if you like that kind of thing that we obsess over around here, you will love Sci-Fi Explosion.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Everybody, please check out Sci-Fi Explosion. And also, speaking of live stuff, Chris and I will both be at Dragon Con.
Yes.
Labor Day weekend down in Atlanta, Georgia. And we are both frantically preparing for all that we'll be doing down there, all sorts of panels and presentations and shows we're both going to be doing, some separately and some together. I believe we're going to be doing at least one or two things together.
Yeah, I will be doing Sci-Fi Explosion again, a new show there, and I'll have tons of prizes, and it's I have all new material and stuff to show and crazy giveaways and audience participation and stuff like that. I'm bringing the show that I do called Music Video Book Club, which is myself and a panelist. And Kevin, I hope you're able to join me for this. We watch music videos that we pick out. This year, the videos will all have a science fiction theme because it's Dragon Con or fantasy or something, you know, kind of in the nerd umbrella. And we watch them, and then we have a discussion about them, just as you would a book club.
I am very excited to be a panelist for your music video book club.
That turns into be, I've done that for New York Comic Con a few times, and it always gets super weird and wild, and I love that. So I'm doing that. Kevin Cafferty and myself, we're doing this panel about 120 minutes, and I don't know if you're on that one too, Kevin. You may.
I don't think I'm officially attached to that one, but I certainly hope to be there for it.
But and then we're doing a dance party afterwards.
Yes, we should specify. You're talking the old MTV 120 minute show.
The old MTV 120 minutes. Will I be there cosplaying as Dave Kendall? Only time will tell. So it's, you know, a lot of fun. So basically, I would just say, like, between now and for those of you going to Dragon Con, just follow Sci-Fi Explosion on your favorite social media waste of time of choice, and you can find out what I'm up to. But yeah, I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing you, Kevin. Cornflake, will you be at Dragon Con? Will I see you there?
Not this year, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, I will be thinking of
Cornflake has appeared virtually on some online Dragon Con panels.
Oh, nice.
Yet to drag her all the way down to Georgia yet, but okay. Hopefully someday.
Well, I would love to meet you in person at some point. So
likewise you, Chris.
And Kevin, I look forward to lots of weirdness at this Dragon Con.
Oh, it's going to get weird when Chris and I arrive down south. Look out, everybody. And yeah, our schedules are still very much in a state of discombobulation right now. But we will share details as they become available as to exactly what in the world we're going to be doing down there. But it's coming soon. We're less than a month away from Dragon Con.
Before you know.
That's why we're freaking out. Okay, I think we've done it. Another annual summertime robot 4.5 list. And hey, Cornflake, please get us out of here.
I will do that. You can find us at flopcast.net, facebook.com/flopcast, on Mastodon at universidon.com/@flopcast, and on Instagram, the_flopcast is our handle there. On Apple Podcasts, you could leave us a rating and or a review if you wanna. We would love that. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
And how did we get the name Sponge Awareness Foundation? Well, we were named after 80s super nerd Eddie Deason. That's true. Cornflake, Chris, thanks for joining me for a 87 robot show. This was terrific, everybody. Hope that was equally enjoyable for you. 1988 coming up soon. Meanwhile, please be safe, be kind, be silly. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Pardon the interruption. We'll bring you back to your podcast in just a moment. But first, promo for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here on the ESO Network, three hosts recommend this podcast.
I recommend it.
I recommend it.
And I recommend it.
On the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, it's a slice of life as we discuss literally anything in the universe. Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here to serve all of your needs.
Wednesday, I'm here with you people. It's like wild.
No pizzas were harmed in the creation of this podcast.
All right, everybody. It's the secret after show. It's the part of the show that nobody hears unless they stick around through the promo. If you're listening to this, you're part of a very, very elite group. And now we can say whatever we want. Cornflake, what are we doing?
I'm going to only let the after show listeners know what extremes I go to get a bargain.
Okay. What are you doing?
Kevin, you've known me for years. You know I'm famously bad at trivia. But thanks to the podcast, I know a thing or two. All right?
Okay.
So I have been getting bargains on getting my dry cleaning done by answering trivia questions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is something the local dry cleaner is doing. One day I walked in with a comforter I needed cleaned, and there was a multiple choice trivia question on the whiteboard at the register saying you could get 15% off if you know the answer. And wow. So I was like, oh, what are the chances this is going to be something that I know? I'm famously bad at this stuff. And
right. So you're like, please let it be something about the facts of life.
Well, the question was about sharks. And I know we've talked about Shark Week here on the Flopcast, although it was a very, very long time ago. And the question was, how many bones does a shark have?
Six.
Well, it was multiple choice, but I have to know. So get this.
Chris, what do you think? Do you have a guess?
Is it possible that they don't have bones, they just have cartilage?
Exactly. They have zero bones because they just have cartilage.
Okay.
Wow, you two know way more about sharks than I do.
That was absolutely just a guess.
Also, when it comes to sharks, I mostly just know about Jabberjaw. That's really the only shark I really understand.
I love that.
Jabberjaw probably doesn't have bones either. But I got it. And then the next time I brought in dry cleaning, there's a new trivia question. And it is...
This time it was about facts of life.
I hope so.
This time it was, what is the oldest soda in the U.S.?
Oh.
And we just discussed this recently as one of our 80s shows.
Did we?
Yeah, Dr. Pepper.
Is it okay? I have no memory of that. You know how I immediately forget everything we say and do on the show?
Yeah, I think that's probably for the best.
Yeah, Dr. Pepper's the oldest soda?
Yeah, it's okay. It predates Pepsi and Coke and all the rest.
Does it predate Mr. Pibb?
Mr. Pibb transcends time.
Mr. Pibb has always been and shall always be.
But I'm really hoping the next trivia question has to do with a wooden Optimus Prime, because I'm going to know that one. Thanks, Chris.
You'll be ready. You know what I forgot to mention, though? Because I really hope some Facts of Life trivia is coming, because you will be all set when they start rolling out the Facts of Life trivia. But I did hear, I listened to that show that you were on recently, Chris, about the Facts of Life.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
What was that show?
That's my friend Derek Gale. He'll be at Dragon Con this year. It's called Gimmicks. It is a great podcast that he does all about like special episodes of shows, non-traditional episodes. And we talked about, they did an episode in 1984-85 called Cruisin', which was done without an audience. It was kind of just them in a car going around Peekskill looking for dates on a Saturday night.
It was absolutely bizarre.
Yes.
We broke out our DVD set. We watched that episode and then I enjoyed the show.
I love Facts of Life so much.
Well, you've come to the right place. It's kind of all we care about.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.